Hi, thank you, Colette. Yeah, I'm just going to do maybe a 20-minute talk, and then there's a video which I made this summer, which is maybe a kind of companion piece to the work that's in there, so I thought maybe I could show that to you. It's about 20 minutes as well, because it's kind of nice for me to be able to show them together, because I haven't done that before. So, I thought that I would start by talking about this video, Proposal for a Clay Machine, which I made in 2008 in the second year of my MA. And then I kind of realised on the train on the way up that this was meant to be... I was meant to be talking about what I'd made after college, and this is blatantly not that at all. But I'm kind of still going to talk about this anyway, because I've realised that I'm at this place on the kind of... the bell curve of talking about art where... I've kind of maybe gone over the top of the bell curve where it's been long enough since I made it that it's separate and I can talk about it and I can really understand why she is not me. And I think this is kind of important for this talk and important for this work, that she of that video, who is also, there's also a she in the video I'll show you later, is this kind of, I guess, I've tried to talk about her as an object. I did this sculpture MA, and I think this is really, it's hard to know, maybe it's just personal, but this woman who is between a performer and an object was a real outcome of being in this place where people made a lot of big macho sculpture. And I think this was, I made a lot of performances for a long time, and this was a solution to a problem that I came across time and again where I really love that live horror of things, and like the problem of having a body in front of you and you reading that and you imagining their intention and you kind of being morally implicated in what they do and what they're forcing you to do. But the tension of that, which is exactly what I'm interested in, I think is often so loud and so foregrounded because people are such strong readers of other humans that it means the other decisions I'd make within those works would really be blanked out. Especially with works like this that use a lot of ineloquence and a lot of ums and ahs and pauses. And yeah, that tension kind of stopped me being able to have a lot of power over the other parts of the work. And so in the videos there was a flattening that was a real useful revelation to me that she is more like an object because you can ignore her and she doesn't know whether you're ignoring her or not. So again, it's funny because I was thinking about this idea of how much more pleasurable it is for me to talk about work when it's been made a certain amount of time ago, and then how that gets turned into a time when I just kind of know what I think about the work already, and or at least I've stopped questioning what it might be, and there it ends up being like all my discussion of it becomes a set of phrases that I've used before, and which when they come out feel a bit embarrassing because I'm not quite sure whether they actually relate to that thing or not, but it's been set. And so when I was trying to think about this again, I realised that process is kind of set in, and maybe I need to stop showing this for a while because every phrase I wrote down was like, oh, this one again. But the things that were important in this to me, the costume, me and Jenny were talking about this costume earlier, which is it's this unitard, like a body stocking pulled over my everyday clothes, and these cheap shoes where if you buy women's cheap shoes, at least I know, and the soles come off, they make a particular noise, and I think they spend a lot of time on the underground, like you can hear a particular type of cheap shoe, often like the metal work is hitting against the fake marble of the underground. But yeah, so they look like dance shoes, but they're not. But the bodysuit came about because I'd done all these years of performance and people would say, what do you do? And you give them the pat answer of like, yeah, I work with performance. And then I'd get this little look, they'd get this little look in their eye, like, and they would imagine me in a bodysuit and think, fucking hell. And then I'd think, well, I mean, it's kind of not like that, but it kind of is like that in a way. And so this was an embracing of that, but kind of also that it was an embracing of a subjectivity, and it's, I guess, the horror in people's faces at the idea of me in a, expressing myself in a bodysuit was obviously quite a strong influence in this of a certain type of 70s kind of video art. And costume seems so important in performance because, again, if people are readers of bodies, they're real readers of costume too, much more adeptly so than they are readers of art, I should think. And this was me trying to accept that if I make a work which has a woman's body in, then a woman's body is never blank, and I never get to be Bruce McDowell, and I never get even to be the Okanchi. Like, there is no black t-shirt, black jeans. It's always a different... And I'm not saying that those examples aren't read in a specific way, but at least you get to maybe it's a historical thing as well, but at least you get to understand what Bruce Nam was doing when he puts on those trousers. But I think, yeah, this is my accepting women's costume. And also, I hope you can see it better in there. My dress is just a bit wrinkled up inside, so it has these lumpy kind of things, which again, I had so many weird conversations about this video, including I did this bit of teaching where there's a problem when I talk about this video, where sometimes my performances doing an artist talk is a little bit like this, and there's a confusion in that. But you know, obviously I take responsibility for that in a different way than I take responsibility for this. But I had this talk to some MA students where a woman stood up in it and asked me a question, and she kept saying, yeah, I think it's a really interesting work, it's really brave of you. And I really didn't know what she was getting on about, but I was kind of trying to dance around it and wonder what she was getting to. And it turned out after like 5 minutes that she just meant that I look a bit fat in it. Like, and I was trying to say, I know what I look like in it. Like, this is a thing. This is what I look like. Like, this is the subjectivity thing that I was trying to talk about. But yeah, so maybe I kind of need a stand-in at some point for me in this situation, because maybe it's too confusing. So, and I guess something that comes into this next video that I will show you is, there's a lot of space in it, and there's kind of a lot, maybe there's more space in the next one, a bit of how you make emptiness and how you claim emptiness and how much you can expect. I mean, so much of a live work, I think, is about a monologue. I don't know if this ever happens. There's no pretense in that you would be taken out of yourself or you'd be put back in yourself, and it would be about the monologue of being an audience. And the internal monologue of being an audience and understanding your position and how you are or not being manipulated or what you will or won't take within the work. And I think that this next piece, which is called Manual, Non-Manual, Manual, has a kind of similar quality of... Well, it acknowledges, I hope, that an audience will never listen to anything wholeheartedly. No one watches anything for 20 minutes. One of the things I really like about being able to make art video and show it in an art space is that at least there's a potential for someone seeing it's 20 minutes, and they'll put 20 minutes into it when even... I do this program called The Lux AAP, which is like a year-long postgraduate educational thing with Lux, the artist, film and video makers in London, which is a totally wonderful thing and I would recommend to anyone. It's like a... Basically, do these long discussions, not about your own work, but about film and video and this and that, once a month, and you have mentors and do this and that and make a project. But one of the great things about that was people showed you a lot of work, like... Every month you just get sent around a few hours worth of videos to watch. But it really pointed out to me that it's kind of amazing that you get to see all these things that you could never see before because of Uber Web or whatever. But I just cannot watch them. I'm watching something I'm totally interested in and checking my email every 2 minutes, and maybe I've made a cup of tea and I went to the toilet, and then I, you know, went back when I thought I'd missed something, and it's really changed the way videos watched. And so it's kind of this weird, pleasant, old-fashioned space of projection in a video that is useful. Anyway, so any questions? Because I guess there won't be questions at the end, so if you want to say anything, just...
Was this work conceived as a performance that was
video? It's definitely a video, yeah. It was only ever made to be videoed, and I think one of the things I like in this, and kind of which exists in the other, is that the way I make it is I video it, watch it back, and change it by doing that process of watching it back, and then choose. I think I did 46 of these, and this was the one that fitted this criteria, whatever the criteria was that I made. And that's really useful for me as the maker, But yeah, it's definitely a video, and that's kind of that thing about flattening the body of the woman in it is exactly like the great thing about that for me. It's called Manual on Manual Manual, which is from a show of the same title. So yeah, I was going to talk about what I did since graduation, but the reality of that is, I say, I did Lux AAP, which is totally wonderful, and I would recommend to anyone. I did some performances, I made some objects, I went to Canada, I went to Sweden, but I did this show in IPS in Bourneville, which I don't know if anyone's been there. I had been there before I did this show. Bourneville is a kind of model, as in perfect village, made by the Roundtree family, who own Cadbury's. Anyway, basically people who owned Cadbury's in the past who were Quakers, and made this ridiculously twee but kind of great village for the workers around the factory, which has got like a cricket pitch and a village green and a village pond, and they have like two churches, a fake medieval church and a fake Tuscan church, and they have like non-stop bell ringing there, and all the houses have names on them. Like each house, these workers' cottages, which seem quite nice, have names, but it's a really weird place. And it's kind of a IPS is part of the art school there, and it seems like they have really good stuff on there, and no one ever goes because it's miles away from anywhere. But yeah, it's kind of worth a visit just because it's a combination of you probably get to see some art and you get to see a really bonkers place, which is, it's dry because the founders didn't pubs there, and it's still run by a committee that, you know, tries to upkeep Bourneville in the manner which it was made, which means that when they had a Tesco Metro built there, like there's a Tesco Metro built everywhere in the world, they couldn't stop the Tesco Metro being built there, but they stopped it having any booze in it. It makes them seem like this weird, sinister, powerful place, because I can't believe that they could even have any influence in that. Yeah, anyway, that's the backstory of IPS. Well, I made this show, which was called Manual, Non-Manual, Manual. This was the invite and also the map for the show. I deliberately didn't put any titles. It was kind of important that there wasn't just a title sheet that you could go around and read. There are titles for things, and it was in the press release, but I really didn't want that kind of relationship to the show. And I hope you can actually see these because they're quite dark, but this is space that was kind of fairly empty. We got to, they have like a little program at the side where you can, the artist can choose someone else's print work that goes up, and that in the corner is this, you can't really see it very well, but it's from those key fan art dog shit works, and so I felt like this was a little garden outside of my ship. The video was shown on these. The things that interest me often in showing work is just the oddness of the space in it, and I guess this is what the map's about, about what's claimed and what's not claimed within an institution, and what's made and what's not made. And so often in a show I will really care about how things are signed, or even just making the vinyl signed things a bit too big and looking a bit clumsy really cheers me up somehow. This is stuff in the video. There are these chairs with these lines of non-slip tape. These things at the back, which, yeah, these are not good pictures actually in here, but these here are kind of posters, and they're kind of repeated prints that I do little drawings on. This work, which you really can't see, which is called Floor Plan 1, which is basically a line of white around here and this little curtain, which was just about this really badly made wall, and they just, on one of the walls in the gallery space, they decided to have a really badly made floating, which I liked. And then around the space are these little machines that are in the jeweller's window. You'll see them, they're really plastic, and they're solar powered little turntables that you put jewellery out in the window, and I wanted there to be these funny little things. They've just got staples, various types of staples on the top of them, and I wanted them to stand in for the kind of bug collecting things and fire safety things and other odd bits of the gallery that you're meant to ignore but are there, so they just spin around at varying speeds depending on what the day's like. And this is a little curtain. And yeah, obviously this is quite a lot like the floor plan of the thing. So I think maybe we should just see this video because it's 20 minutes and then...
I was just going to ask, what's the relationship between sort of how you can see something to come from life and then something that comes to form? Like, how does that... Just right at the beginning, or is it...
Yeah, it's definitely right at the beginning. I end up making about one performance a year now because I kind of, when I do performances, I like them to kind of have a fair bit of humiliation in the most, in a kind of slight way, but just that they're always kind of uncomfortable for me and kind of uncomfortable for the audience, and I just can't be asked doing that all the time. But often with an audience, when I do work with an audience, there'll be some form of participation. I'll attempt to make an audience participate in something, or the work I made at the beginning of this year, which is called Yes, Yes. I do a work in which I am both the audience and the performer, in that I pretend we're going to do a participation work, but I take both roles. I just get on and off the stage and act it out for people, which isn't very well explained. But
which sort of moves in the way?
Yeah.
Talking about that sort of filming yourself as being able to see something filmed.
Yeah, and this.
Dressing yourself, I
think. Yeah, totally. I mean, there's always that loop when I made performances because I video them, and that was how I ended up making the video, realizing that was a way of making a video. But in this one that I'm going to show you now, I had a monitor strapped underneath the camera so that I could kind of make eye contact with myself during it. Mm-hmm. Apart from, obviously, it's not a mirror, it's a real thing, so a lot of the reason I'm using it is because I want to maintain some kind of symmetry in the work. But there's a little delay. Maybe, you know, you just can't work out which hand's which straight away, and I think that seeped into the work somehow, and I really like that, not quite recognition of myself is in there. Anyone else?
I have a question about the last thing.
Yeah, go for your last.
You know what you were saying about how you were accepting the woman's body as kind of being, in some sense, kind of not a blank canvas?
Yeah.
Are you thinking, because I'm just interested, I suppose, in whether that means that you think that the lens body doesn't come with a set of preconceptions, or do you just mean from an art historical perspective?
I think it's from it's from an art historical perspective, really, and it's not. Obviously I understand that a man's body doesn't actually come with blankness, but it's just a kind of comparative. There's a time when I saw a lot of live art, and which I still kind of love a bit, but it's problematic in many ways. And so much of the costume, or no costume in that, seemed to be an attempt at blankness by nakedness, as if that would stop a reading, when obviously it's there'd be some white clothing, as if white clothing meant nothing, when of course people are so quick to know the difference between a £120 shirt and a £5 shirt, or people can do that stuff. And that was just an attempt to say, I understand that there's no blankness. And I was talking about it in reference to a woman, because that's kind of how I ended. That's my angle. I think there is the options for, one of the things that is in both of these videos and in a lot of my performance work is how a gendered approach to failure, and what in this work I'm trying to do something and it maybe isn't being successful, or I'm not doing it well and I'm not doing it particularly professionally. And so I think part of it is about ambition and how ambition might be gendered, and the options for how a woman can play out her ambition and how that leads her to be read. And I think there is a thing about what a woman's failing body means is really different to how a man's body can fail, where... my inability to look after my own image and my inability to look after my own, to manage effectively the description of my sexuality or of what I want in the world is kind of, has the potential to be repulsive in a way that it's difficult for a heterosexual man's body to be viewed, I think, and that's kind of important.
Repulsive to a heterosexual man?
Yeah, or, but also, I mean, the spectre of a woman getting older is really, I mean, it's a very basic thing to say. It's the spectre of a woman getting older is different to the spectre of a man.
Yeah, I was just wondering, you spoke the other company about that, thank you, that was really good. I was just wondering if that's because of the genderedness of the prevailing gaze.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I'm not, I think I read this really amazing thing that Ian White, who does the looks, put me onto, that was kind of about how, I can't remember who wrote it, this woman are writing about flat effect and queerness, and how, I mean, it's just about what oddness does, what not recognition does, and I think that's really interesting.
I'm thinking, Lucy. Thank you.